hand on her cheek. "Mum, sorry, it's just that I hardly ever see you these days." It was true, and Cherry, awkward, evaded answering. "How are you?" "Fine. Can I get you a drink? Glass of wine, seeing as we're celebrating?" Cherry knew that her mum would only have white, and that it would be sweet, something she detested, but she didn't want to upset her. So Cherry made some excuse about not starting too early, saying she'd have tea instead. She followed Wendy into the kitchen, where her mum made a cup of tea in a mug with Daniel Craig's face on it. No neck, just his disembodied, handsome face, with its craggy smile staring out, floating on a background of white china. It looked surreal. As her mother filled the kettle, Cherry took a moment to appraise her. She dyed her hair again. It was a different colour every time Cherry saw her, as if she was working her way through the L'Oreal brunette spectrum. 83 there were in total, her mum had said once, finding out this nugget of information from the supplier's catalogue. Underneath that, it was grey, but the colour had once been the same lustrous brown-black as Cherry's. She'd inherited the best of both of her parents' looks, with the odd gene thrown in from a grandparent in a collection of random good luck that could never have been predicted. Wendy led her into the living room. "You can have the tilter if you want." "No, it's fine. You have it." Cherry quickly sat down at the opposite side of the sofa, remembering the time she'd been made to sit in the tilting seat to satisfy her mother's excitement and had been thrust back like she was at the dentist's and had felt every bit as helpless. "I'm thinking of painting that wall red." Wendy pointed her mug at the wall that was the backdrop to the massive TV. "Like a statement." "A statement of what?" Cherry hadn't meant to let the irritation creep in, but here it was already. "I don't know. Why'd you always have to be so..." She was going to say critical, but bit her tongue. "Not today." They both looked into their mugs of tea, vowing to do better. The TV was on mute, a game show. Cherry hated all game shows for the single reason that the members of the public always ended up unwittingly humiliating themselves by looking cheap or ridiculous in their carefully chosen TV outfits. She also couldn't stand how thick everyone was, teachers not knowing the capital of Canada. It was pathetic. "How's work?" said Cherry. "Oh, you should have seen the queues on Saturday. We sold out of every one of the disposable barbecues, and I told them we'd need more." "They should listen to you." "Yes, they should," said Wendy, pleased. "How long have you been there now?" "Well, I started when you was just two, as we needed the money," Wendy began, and Cherry, who'd heard this story before, found herself just waiting for the punchline. "It was only meant to be part-time, and I started at the checkout, worked my way up. Took on more days when your dad passed. I was reliable, you see, and a hard worker. None of this needing to disappear to take the dog to the vet or what have you. Anyway, it'll be 23 years this September." Wendy smiled proudly, lost for a minute in her own achievement. Cherry could think of nothing worse than being stuck in a mammoth warehouse full of people pushing around huge wire baskets on wheels. She secretly thought that becoming a section manager after 23 years didn't sound like that much of a promotion. Surely you'd be heading up the entire region or something by then, but thinking about it all depressed her, so she stopped. "The good things come to those who work hard, see? That's when you get the promotions and stuff."
"How's Holly?"
"Not happy. Her daughter went to an X Factor audition but had a really hard time. They slated her, apparently. Holly got really upset about it."
Wendy leaned forward and patted her knee.
"Never mind about all that. What about you? I still can't believe my daughter's gotten herself a proper job now. There's always money in property," she said sagely, although this was a general perception that Wendy had latched on to, rather than personal knowledge.
At last, Cherry could smile, although she wouldn't be going into any detail.
"Good. Really good, in fact. I'm enjoying it a lot at the moment."
"Well, that's great. I always knew you'd do all right. You was the smart one of the family. So what do you do then? Sell posh houses?"
"Yes, mostly. A few rentals."
"Bet they go for a bit up there, don't they? How much would it cost me to rent my flat up in La La Land?"
"Well, it wouldn't look like this exactly, but for the floor space, about $3,000.
$3,000 a month?"
"A week." Wendy's face was so gobsmacked, so dumbfounded, that Cherry started to giggle. She couldn't help it. She wasn't being malicious or making fun of her, but with her mum's jaw dropped and held in some sort of freeze frame, it just looked funny. Wendy slowly closed her mouth.
"Jeez Louise!"
and then, aware of how she must have looked, she started to laugh too. For a short while, when each looked at the other, it just made them laugh more. It was a rare moment, the two of them getting on, sharing a joke. Pleased with the way they seemed to have hit on a safe topic, Wendy suddenly got an idea.
"Hey, my shift's changed next week. I'll get Tuesdays off. Maybe I could come and see you, take you for lunch."
Cherry thought quickly and pulled a face.
"I only get half an hour."
"That's illegal."
"It's fine."
"No, you're entitled to an hour. It's the law. You should speak to your boss about that."
"Leave it, Mum."
"No."
"Mum, please."
Wendy was silenced for a moment.
"Are they paying you properly?"
"Mum."
"You was never that good with money. Always frittering it away."
Cherry choked on her tea, actually splattering some on the cream leather sofa.
"Don't look at me like that. You blew your savings on a trip to Australia."
"A working vacation. A cultural experience."
She looked around for something to wipe off the tea and found a box of tissues, Kleenex collection, with a photograph of water lilies on the front. It was designed to appeal to homemakers who thought it important to make tissues part of their decor. For a moment she hesitated, not wanting to take one, as if it was a sweet offered by a witch who'd trapped you in her lair once you'd tasted it. She was reminded that if she ever lost her job, this flat was where she'd have to return. The bleakness of it all frightened her.
"You could have invested it," continued Wendy. "Premium bonds or something."
"Mum, premium bonds pay you no interest."
"No, but they're better odds than the lottery."
Cherry gritted her teeth and decided not to point out the obvious. Instead, she said,
"What would you do if you won?"
"Go on a big trip. I'd take Holly. She could do with a bit of cheering up."
"Would you move?"
"There's them nice new houses that they've built next to the River Wandle."
Cherry made a sound of exasperation.
"Mum, you could leave Croydon, you know."
"Never. Born here. It's in my blood. No better place as far as I'm concerned."
This declaration made Cherry fidgety again and anxious to speed the evening along. To think she could have been at the Cavendishes' beautiful house tonight. She had desperately wanted to accept Laura's dinner invitation, but she knew that cancelling the visit to her mother was just too complicated. It would only have prolonged the agony anyway, as she would have had to have found another date. Cherry had already invented something she had to get away for, meeting a couple of friends for drinks, and had told her mum on the phone before she'd even arrived. She surreptitiously checked her watch. She could start making sounds in about 10 minutes. Croydon was so far out, it could legitimately take ages to get anywhere else in London. In actual fact, she was going home to figure out what to wear the next day, an outfit that had to cover the evening too, something that would be suitable for supper with Mr. and Mrs. Cavendish. Supper didn't sound so bad now. Daniel had said not to worry about what she wore, but, of course, that was ridiculous.
"Anyway, maybe I'd win enough to buy one of them big mansions on that Webb estate."
Cherry stiffened.
"You ever hear from Nicholas?"
Wendy said, feigning nonchalance.
"No."
"I suppose it's to be expected."
She sounded reassured, as if her suspicions had been proven right, and it made Cherry bridle.
"What do you mean?"
"You know, he was a bit different, wasn't he?"
"Different how?"
she said dangerously.
"Well," stated Wendy nervously, "the rich have a different life. Not something we really know about."
Wendy patted Cherry's hand, meaning to be consoling, to dismiss him and welcome her back to their mutually supportive club, but Cherry recoiled inwardly. She was consumed with anger and pride. Even her own mother thought he was out of her league. It was so wrong, so utterly ridiculous, to believe that you couldn't be with someone else, that they were better than you because they had money.
"You're not upset, are you?"
"No."
"Only..."
"What?"
"You might not have seen this."
Wendy pushed across the local paper and opened it up to the local wedding section. Nicholas's face smiled out at her. Next to it was a blonde from the bar in a tiara and white gown. They radiated togetherness. Cherry went rigid, and she forced herself not to show any emotion other than indifference. She looked at the photo for signs that he was thinking of her instead, that the marriage to, she read the name, Gabriella Clara Butler Oswald, was something he'd been pressured into, something he had to endure if he was to stand a chance of taking over his father's business. She thought she might have caught a glimpse of strain in his smile, but then that could have just been a reaction to the relentless greed of the wedding camera, shot after shot. She pushed the paper back.
"Good luck to them."
It was said in a tone that meant the subject was closed.
Do you want to check your room? See if there's anything else you need to take back with you? I've sorted through all your old toys from when you was little.
Cherry did not. She already had everything she wanted from this flat, and the thought of taking any part of her childhood into her new life felt like the worst kind of contamination.
I can't, Mum. I'm going to meet some friends. Maybe next time, eh?
And with that, she stood. I need to get going, actually. Got to get back into London. Wendy covered her disappointment and stood too.
Oh, well, thanks for coming out all this way, love. I do appreciate it.
There was a brief silence during which neither of them said anything, and then Cherry smiled brightly.
Right,
she said, and made her way to the door. She let her mum kiss her on the cheek, and then found a small box pressed into her hand.
Happy birthday, said Wendy, beaming, expectant,
and Cherry could tell it was something she'd been dying to give her. It was wrapped in doodled flowery paper, the kind that looked as if it was designed by a 4-year-old and came under the category of cute. The right thing to do would have been to open it there and then, but Cherry couldn't face pretending not to be disappointed. She put it in her bag.
All the best, love, said Wendy with a catch in her voice.
It was agony. Cherry knew her mother was aware she couldn't wait to get away, but she quickly pushed the realization away, pretending not to notice Wendy's look of hurt. Her chest was tight with guilt. She hated being there, hated what she became when she was there.
Thanks, Mum.
She escaped and hurried back to East Croydon station. With every step, the guilt grew. She got out her phone and sent a soul-clearing text, something jolly and light-hearted about how nice it had been to see her. Once she'd gotten a cheerful reply, she felt the pain in her chest ease, and gradually the train and then the tube transported her back home. It only took half an hour to get to Tooting, and the evening was still warm. She poured herself a glass of wine left over from the weekend with Daniel, and went out into the tiny courtyard garden. It was only 3 steps wide and 6 steps long, and she could see St. George's Hospital chimneys from beyond the fence and the row of Victorian flats that ran parallel to hers, but it was a little piece of outside. A fox slipped quickly and silently into a hole it had dug under her fence and disappeared into the neighbour's garden. She sipped her wine and watched it go, impressed with the creature's ability to make a home anywhere in London. She'd heard a radio show a few weeks back, where people from places like Barnes and Chelsea were phoning in to complain about the foxes coming into their houses. Tooting had been as close as she could get to the capital centre, rising rental prices acting as a thicket of thorns to keep her from going any farther. This made her think about what she was going to wear the next day, and galvanised, she took her wine inside to the bedroom. Opening up her wardrobe doors, she scanned her clothes critically. It was going to be another hot day, so something that wouldn't look creased and shabby after working in the office. She decided on a tailored, sleeveless silk shirt and navy pencil skirt. She made a space for the chosen items in the middle of the wardrobe by pushing everything else to the sides, and then hung them together. She looked at them, satisfied for a moment, before closing the door. She went back into the garden and thought excitedly about the next day and how much she was looking forward to meeting Daniel's parents. Felt a warmth toward Laura for inviting her over, and so soon in her and Daniel's relationship. It was something that had never happened the entire time she was seeing Nicholas. She imagined them hitting it off right away, and a wave of pleasure washed over her as she saw herself fitting in. Daniel was so easygoing, and she had a feeling that his parents would be her type of people. It was only much later, when she went to bed that night, she remembered the present. It was the latest iPhone, and Cherry knew it was her mother's attempt to understand her, buy her something that she thought the younger generation might like. She also knew the cost would have been a sacrifice for her mum. It seemed so sad somehow, and anyway, she already had one. The guilt flared up again, and she discarded the gift in a drawer and lay back on the pillows and sighed. How her mother fit into her future, she didn't know.
7. Friday, June 13. The Cavendish house was only a 10-minute walk from the air conditioning of the office, but Cherry was hot and bothered. Even in early evening it was 80 degrees, and she quickly and subtly checked her armpits for damp patches. Other than a tiny 5-pence-shaped dot under the right arm, thankfully, she'd escaped. Cherry was nervous. She wanted to be liked. She looked at the bunch of tiger lilies in her hand, artfully arranged in brown paper with twine, tied like a corset stays, and wondered again if they were too much. There seemed to be a lot of them,
and they were, well, big. They should be, she thought wryly. They'd cost her 60 quid. And then again, lilies were big. She counted the stems. 7. Surely that wasn't over the top. She swapped hands so they didn't get too sweaty, and decided it was too late to do anything about them now. She turned into the Cavendish's street, and, checking her watch, realized with a flicker of apprehension that she was going to be early. Oh, God, she didn't want to look too desperate or anything. Quickly, she turned down another side street, which, if she followed it around, would bring her to the other end of the road she was in now. She walked along, pretending to be a little bit lost, in case there was anyone around who might know the people she was going to see, and a story of her wandering around came out in some later casual conversation. The idea of it made her cringe with embarrassment. She turned back into the top end of the Cavendish's road, checking her watch and matching her pace so that she reached the iron gate of number 38 at exactly 6:30. She walked across the checkerboard of immaculate black-and-white tiles to the large, imposing black front door and rang the bell. It wasn't long before it was thrown open, a warm, wide welcome from Daniel. He took her hand and kissed her fully but quickly on the mouth.
"Aye, they're dying to meet you," he whispered in her ear as a sort of preemptive warning,
and then she heard two sets of footsteps approaching. Mr. Cavendish was first, a large, broad-shouldered man, who was used to riding into rooms without any fear of who might be in them. He wore a short-sleeved shirt tucked into shorts, an odd mix of semi-formal and casual, and she felt pinned down by the full beam of his not-unkind eyes. He grasped her free hand with more force than was necessary, in a confident, brisk male way, and if she was honest, it hurt.
"Dad, this is Cherry."
"Howard," he said, introducing himself.
"Nice to meet you."
"Great to meet you, Howard." He let go of her hand and it tingled as the bones realigned and the blood rushed back. Then it was Laura's turn. To Cherry's surprise and secret delight, the other woman took her hand and, after looking at it in some sort of charmed way, drew her closer and kissed her on each cheek.
"Lovely to meet you, Cherry."
"You too." She handed over the bouquet. "These are for you." Laura took them with a look of genuine pleasure, and Cherry was glad she'd paid so much for them.
"Oh, they're absolutely beautiful. Thank you."
Cherry couldn't quite believe that this glamorous woman was probably the same age as her own mother. They couldn't look more different. Laura was tall, statuesque, and a shimmering blonde. Her cream silk blouse and wide-legged caramel trousers draped over her frame as if they were privileged to do so. The whole effect was one of a burnished gold goddess.
"I love your top,"
she found herself gushing, and had to try to suppress the flush that rose up her cheeks.
"Likewise," said Laura. "That colour is amazing on you."
The flush went higher. Cherry felt as though she'd forced Laura to say something nice in return, and she stood there dumb and smiling, and wishing fiercely she had been a little more sophisticated.
"Time for a drink,"
said Howard, and he led the way into what Cherry knew would be only one of the reception rooms. She sat on the edge of a long grey sofa, and, thankfully, Daniel took the seat next to her. Laura was a few steps behind, and must have put the flowers down somewhere as her hands were free. She couldn't have put them in a vase that quickly, and Cherry found herself feeling slighted. Were her flowers lying bruised on a shelf somewhere?
"Get a grip," she told herself sternly. "She's hardly going to disappear for 10 minutes arranging flowers when you've only just got here. The flowers will be fine."
"Aperitif," said Howard.
"Yes, please."
"Bellini."
However, he was already pouring one and handed it to her. She tried not to let the bubbles go up her nose as she had a sip.
"You've been working today?"
asked Howard as he continued to serve the drinks.
"Yes, at Highsmith and Brown."
Laura took a glass from her husband and glided into the armchair opposite her.
"Daniel said, do you enjoy it?"
"Yes, very much."
"How long have you been there?"
"Not long." She didn't elaborate, and in the pocket of silence, she moved her glass to the other hand. She knew she had to relax, but she was so anxious to make a good impression. Her mind was working overtime, trying to remember what she did and didn't want to say. She was in danger of coming across as rude.
"What did you do before?" asked Howard.
"I was in the hospitality industry."
Both of Daniel's parents smiled with what Cherry took to be polite interest. She felt another blush threatening. It was obvious they knew that she'd said this as a cover for working in a restaurant. Feeling foolish, she spoke quickly.
"Before that, I was in Australia. I was,
I wanted to take some time off after my exams.
Which university were you at?
Said Howard. She inwardly cringed. I didn't. But I did do my A-levels. What is the matter with me, trying to justify myself like a child?
So you came back and decided to start a career, learn on the job. Very commendable, said Laura, especially with the cost of university these days.
Cherry smiled and nodded along. She knew Laura was covering for her. She self-consciously swapped her glass back into the other hand and wondered what to say to change the subject. Daniel pulled her from the sofa.
Come on, let me show you around. You can give us your professional opinion.
She followed him out of the room, feeling like she'd failed the first test. They were barely through the door when Daniel pinched her bum. She only just managed to suppress a squeal and poked him in the arm in admonishment, but in fact the intimacy had cheered her.
The hallway, he said. As you can see, we have one.
And very beautiful it is too, said Cherry, aware that his parents could probably hear everything they were saying.
And it was. A gleaming parquet floor led to two large curved white and wood staircases, one going up, one down. A Turkish rug was placed in front of the marble fireplace, which was flanked by a large armchair, and Cherry wondered if anyone actually sat there.
You don't need to worry so much. They like you,
Daniel said in lowered tones, but Cherry gave him a warning look. She'd heard Laura come in behind them.
I'm just going to finish the soufflé, she said, and headed into the kitchen.
We won't go in there. Don't want to disturb the chef.
Instead, he led her up the staircase. As they got to the next floor, they didn't stop.
This is Mum's room.
And he continued upward, as Cherry noted how a whole floor could be dedicated to one person's bedroom, and probably huge bathroom and dressing room. She also noted that Mr. and Mrs. Cavendish didn't appear to sleep together. At the next floor, Daniel led her into one of the bedrooms.
My room, he said. Well, it's not really. Not any more, but this was the room I had when I was growing up.
It held a solid oak king-size bed, a wardrobe, and a desk, but what set it apart was that it was a photographic homage to the man who stood beside her. Photos covered every wall, every surface, Daniel at Machu Picchu, Easter Island, the pyramids, a range of extreme sports, mountain climbing, skiing, whitewater rafting in the Grand Canyon, pictures of the Grand Tour. There were trophies, cups for rugby, cricket, and tennis. Each one was dust-free and gleaming. It was a visual representation of his boyhood and all he'd had access to.
Wow, quite an achiever.
Nothing to do with me. Well, I did run about a bit. I mean, it's Mum who insists on putting them up.
She must be very proud.
Cherry moved over to the window and picked up a photo of Daniel cycling in the Pyrenees. Someone, presumably Laura, had marked this on the mounting along with the date. As she put it back down, she looked out the window and her eye was drawn to a bluish-tinged triangle about 3 meters by 2 in the middle of the lawn. It looked like glass.
What's that?
He came up behind her.
The window. For the pool.
Cherry turned, wide-eyed.
You have a swimming pool under there. Underground?
Yep, starts under the garden, goes farther under the house, and off that, under the front of the house, a cellar and a room where Dad likes to hang out, watch movies. And next layer down, small garage. Fancy a dip?
Cherry stared at the window, tried to imagine what it was like. Haven't brought my suit.
Doesn't matter.
Daniel started to kiss the back of her neck, but she squirmed.
Your mother's downstairs, she hissed.
Yes, he said, continuing to kiss her.
She pushed him away.
I want to make a good impression. Don't make me look ruffled.
You look absolutely beautiful tonight. Fancy a quickie.
Absolutely not.
A bell rang. He groaned.
My mother has other ideas.
Tell me that wasn't a summons.
It's a large house. She had to call me to the table somehow. What am I going to do about this?
He indicated his groin, which was bulging against the fly of his shorts.
Think of me naked all through dinner?
You are such a tease.
But he loved it, and she knew it. Holding her hand, Daniel led her back down the stairs, and they met with Laura in the hallway. She was carrying a tray with 4 steaming ramekins. Sorry if I cut the tour short, but this will go flat. Daniel dropped her hand as he went to take the tray from his mother. It gave her an irrational sense of abandonment, and the nerves swiftly kicked in again. Dinner was served in the dining hall, where the table was boarded by the largest number of passengers for some time. Cherry was opposite Howard, Daniel his mother.
Everything shone with purpose. The cutlery, the glasses, even the dinnerware. A white set with watercolour flowers painted around the edge. A large modern oil hung from the wall, nearly the entire length of the room. A statement that was as confidently expensive as the rest of the house.
"Ta-da!" said Daniel, as he placed the tray of soufflés on the table.
Cherry immediately got a whiff of an unmistakable fishy scent. Crab. She balked. She'd had a bad experience with one of her mum's discounted purchases at the outer limit of its sell-by date, and had spent most of the night throwing up in the bathroom. The smell was making her feel nauseous, but she resolved to get through it. A dish was placed in front of her, a fluffy pillow of soufflé just waiting for her to break through its peaked surface. She waited as long as she could, until everyone had been served, and had taken their first bite. Then she picked up the small fork, thinking it might load less on it than the spoon, and tentatively tried it. It was all she could do not to gag. Cherry wondered miserably how she was going to get through the course without being sick or offending her hostess. She stopped for a sip of wine, then slowly forked up another mouthful. But Laura noticed she was struggling.
"Is everything okay?"
Cherry considered bluffing, but caved in.
"I'm sorry. I don't like crab."
"Oh, my goodness, don't eat it!"
"Sorry,"
repeated Cherry, embarrassed.
"It makes me feel unwell."
Daniel clapped his hand on his head.
"It's my fault. Sorry, Cherry. Mum asked me to check. I completely forgot."
He looked contrite.
"I thought it would be okay."
"I'm so sorry," said Laura, standing and taking away her plate.
"Poor you," said Howard.
Laura went to take the plate into the kitchen.
"Moses can have it."
"The cat," explained Daniel. "Well, I thought it was delicious," said Howard, scraping the last from his dish as Laura reappeared. "Very nice, Mum," said Daniel.
"Glad you liked it."
She ate her own portion and looked regretful.
"Sorry, Cherry."
She was being kind, but Cherry was mortified. She heard her stomach rumble and pulled the muscles in quickly so it wouldn't be noticed.
"And you're hungry," said Howard. "Can we get her anything else?"
"I'm fine, honestly."
"Are you sure?" continued Laura. "I feel like I just tried to poison you or something. Some melon? Or I think we have a bit of pâté in the fridge."
"I was ill on mussels once," said Howard. "Never been able to face them since."
Cherry wished they'd all shut up about it. Daniel put a comforting hand on her leg under the table.
"Thanks, Dad. Don't think we need any reminders of that one."
A mewing sound came from the kitchen. Laura stood.
"Moses," she called, "are you still hungry?"
"Always have a pet," said Howard. "Green garbage cans. Although I am more of a dog man myself."
"Why didn't we get one then?" asked Daniel.
"Your mother wouldn't have it. Reminded her of the cocker spaniel she had as a child."
"He was run over," said Laura. "It devastated me. I had nightmares for weeks."
"Shame," said Daniel. "I like dogs."
The cat mewed loudly and came prancing in, then rubbed himself against Laura's legs.
"Don't listen to him," she said. "You're our favourite."
Cherry looked at the animal with immense dislike. It was irrational, she knew, but even the cat was conspiring against her. Everyone but Cherry liked the bloody souffle. Why couldn't she be a souffle-liking person like these people?
"Fillet steak and sautéed potatoes for the main course," said Laura tentatively to Cherry. "Is that okay?"
Cherry gave an overly compensatory smile.
"Sounds great."
"What's for dessert, Mum?" asked Daniel.
"I wondered when you'd get to that," Laura smiled. "Presumably you know all about Daniel's addiction to chocolate, Cherry."
Cherry smiled again, a big beam to match the conversation. She didn't.
"I have to hide it when he's home," said Laura.
"Oh, do you?"
thought Cherry.
"You'll be pleased to know it's chocolate and pistachio marquise."
Daniel threw an arm around his mum.
"You star."
Cherry didn't know what a marquise was.
"Is that okay?" Laura asked her.
"Yes, lovely," said Cherry.
"I must be crazy to move out," said Daniel,
and Cherry got a little flutter of anxiety. She looked up and, with relief, saw he was joking. It was obvious they got on well, though, he and Laura. Extremely well. It was an alien concept to her, being close to your mother, and their easy banter threw her off balance. She imagined having that level of closeness with her own mum, and instantly cringed with revulsion. It hadn't always been like that. They'd been close when she was young. As a child, she'd adored Wendy, in fact. But then, as she'd gotten older, she'd become embarrassed of her. This mother who worked in the supermarket and whose world was so small. It was made worse by Wendy being so nice. She was like a puppy, always running around after her, wanting to be part of her life. It made Cherry guilty, and she sometimes thought that if Wendy would just slap her across the face and tell her how bad her behaviour was, it would make everything so much easier. Thoughts of Wendy put Cherry in an even darker mood. She tried to shrug them off, enjoy the steak and what turned out to be a posh chocolate mousse.
"So, when do I get my den back?"
asked Howard, topping up everyone's wine. Daniel laughed.
"Yesterday," he explained. "Dad came down to use the pool. There was plenty of room for both of us," he said to his father.
"Your stroke is all over the place. More water out of that pool than in.
You just didn't want to get shown up.
I've been perfectly used to you not being here. Cherry, it's a shame you couldn't keep him entertained last night as well."
"Cherry had other plans," said Daniel.
"Yes," said Cherry. They all looked at her. She'd said very little during dinner, too nervous, too self-conscious to really contribute, and it felt odd to be the centre of attention. She hadn't intended the one-word answer to sound so mysterious, but now, she suddenly realised, it actually worked out quite well.
"Anything nice?" asked Laura.
She made herself look embarrassed to have been saying it, as if she didn't want to make a big deal.
"It was my birthday. I spent the evening with my mother."
Daniel sat back in his chair in surprise.
"You never told me."
He took her face in both his hands and kissed her.
"Happy birthday."
She smiled modestly.
"Thank you." "How lovely," exclaimed Laura. "Many happy returns for yesterday."
Cherry was pleased with everyone's reaction. Now she couldn't be accused of letting Daniel know in advance so as to secure an expensive present. But she secretly knew that his inevitable guilt at missing her big day would probably procure something even better. Howard had already been to the kitchen and was coming in clutching a bottle of champagne and four glasses, which he held upside down by the stems. Pleased, Cherry noticed that it was Veuve Clicquot Rosé.
"This calls for a celebration," said Howard.
He gave everyone a glass of pretty pink fizz and lifted his own.
"To Cherry."
"To Cherry," said Daniel and Laura,
and for the first time that evening, she felt a part of everything.
"So what did you get up to with your mum?" asked Laura.
The bubble evaporated. Cherry felt on the spot. She could hardly talk about a strained hour in the pokey flat, avoiding the tilting sofa and thinking of excuses to leave. Everyone was looking at her expectantly, smiling.
"Not much."
She watched Laura's face become puzzled before she covered again.
"Well, sometimes it's nice to have a quiet one."
Cherry churned inside with misery. At that moment, she felt a gulf apart from everyone else in the room, including Daniel. She had a sudden overwhelming need to get away, to catch her breath and work out what had gone so wrong with this evening she'd been looking forward to so much. She stood.
"I'm just going to go..."
Laura indicated the way out into the hall.
"First door on the left."
Cherry locked the door behind her and sank down onto the floor. Why couldn't she fit in? Her mother's words of the night before rang in her ears.
"The rich have a different life. Not something we really know about."
Was she right? So far, the evening had been a horrible collection of tense, awkward moments. Nothing like she'd envisaged. She'd imagined herself falling into a warm friendship with Laura, finding some common ground early on, maybe sharing a joke or two, perhaps even going into the kitchen to help Laura with the supper. Cherry had even dreamed of Laura as a motherly substitute, taking her under her stylish wing and being the kind of mother she wished she had. She burned with embarrassment at her girlish fantasy. Somehow she had spent the evening feeling inferior, unworthy of these people. Humiliation turned to resentment, and she angrily flushed the toilet and ran the taps, just in case anyone was listening. She just wanted to go home, and the disappointment and sense of failure were crushing. How was she ever going to escape her life if she couldn't even hold a conversation with someone over a certain salary bracket? She took a breath and then opened the bathroom door. The hallway was empty. Making her way back into the dining room, she saw everyone had left the table. Howard had disappeared, and Laura and Daniel had their backs to her and were peering over a laptop. Laura had an affectionate arm over Daniel's shoulders, and Cherry stared. The draped arm felt like a barrier to her, stopping her from coming in. "She's found you somewhere wonderful," said Laura. They were looking at photos of the flat. What was she? The staff, the hired agent, only useful to find property for her son. Even as she thought this, Cherry knew it was unreasonable, but she didn't care. She walked over and joined them. Then she deliberately put her arm on Daniel's lower back and started to caress it. He turned to her and smiled. On Laura's face, she caught a look of surprise and felt her quickly take her own arm away. "It's nice, isn't it?" said Cherry, keeping her eyes on the screen. She smiled inwardly, a sense of satisfaction creeping over her as she kept her hand possessively in place. 8. The kitchen was full of post-dinner debris. Plates, glasses and pans were stacked by the sink, the culinary wreckage from the evening. The dishwasher had long finished its gurgling with the first load that she'd filled some hours before, but Laura couldn't face the rest. It could wait for Mrs. Moore in the morning. She sat on her swing seat in the garden, pushing herself against the ground with her foot, pondering the evening. She had seemed nice enough, Daniel's girlfriend, although quiet. Laura supposed she was nervous, but it had been hard to engage her in conversation. In fact, she'd practically clammed up when they'd mentioned her birthday with her mother. And then there was that odd thing she'd done, at the end of the evening, with her hand. It was almost as though she was claiming Daniel, wanted to score a point. No, that was silly, and Laura felt bad for thinking it. The girl was probably just nervous as hell, poor thing. Soon after, Daniel had offered to take her home, and Laura had known they were itching to get away, and she smiled, knowing they needed time for themselves. Daniel had driven her back to Tooting, and as he'd left, he made it clear she shouldn't wait up. Once they'd gone, Howard retreated again to his study. Even Moses had gone out for a night prowl, and now she was left with her thoughts. The wind coursed through the trees at the end of the garden, and she shivered. The temperature had dropped for the first time in a week. Laura realized she was cold and went back inside, closing up the bifold doors behind her. Lying in bed, she tried to sleep, but felt restless. The curtains billowed in the buffeting wind. Then there was a crack of thunder. Finally, the storm that they had been waiting for was breaking. The rain started, and in a matter of seconds it was hammering against the window in some disjointed, torrential rhythm as the wind blew it bullyingly about. Laura got up, and as she went to close the window, she saw a flash of lightning against the sky. It lit up the garden, and the large opaque ground window glistened wet in the rain. Then she heard a faint mew. The next flash illuminated Moses outside the bifold doors, waiting to be let in. "Oh, Moses," she said exasperatedly, but quickly went downstairs. As she opened the doors, he scuttled inside, gratefully rubbing his thanks against her legs. She stood for a moment and watched the storm, but then a flurry of rain blew into her face and she shut the door. She looked around for Moses, but he had gone for a late supper, so she left him and went back upstairs to bed. She lay staring at the ceiling. Through the plaster was Howard in his study, engrossed in work one floor above her. She thought about how sad it was that they didn't really talk anymore. She turned over on her side and instead thought of Cherry. She resolved to do something for her, something to make her feel comfortable. Perhaps she'd take her out somewhere. Yes, that would be nice. She switched off her light and the room plummeted into darkness. She tried to block out the storm battling at the window, and at some point must have succeeded, for she drifted off to sleep. 9. Saturday, June 14. The following morning was fresh, with a soft blue sky. The streets had been washed by the rain, but were now dry in the morning sun. As Laura stepped out of her front door, she saw Daniel's open-topped Mercedes turn at the corner and make its way down toward the house. She went to the gate and waved as they came closer. Cherry was in the passenger seat. "Hello, you two." They pulled up outside the house, and Daniel gave Cherry a lingering kiss. Then he jumped out, and, to Laura's surprise, Cherry swung her legs over and shifted into the driver's seat. "Thanks again for a lovely evening, Laura," called Cherry with a smile that didn't seem to have any of the anxiety she'd displayed the previous evening. Then she drove off quickly, with a squeal of tires. Laura was taken aback. "What's she doing?"
"Going to work."
But that's your car."
"I've loaned it to her today. We were late getting up," he explained,
and I didn't want her to get into trouble at work.
He smiled to himself. Now that Cherry had discovered sex properly, she found she loved it, much to his delight.
Oh, right.
Laura, if she admitted it, felt a little put out. She'd bought Daniel the car for his 21st birthday. It had been a special gift, one that she'd thought about for ages beforehand and had chosen carefully.
That's okay, isn't it?
Of course. How do you know she's a good driver?
Daniel laughed. Oh, Mum, don't worry. I think she'll be fine. Although that was a bit of a racing start, he said, watching as Cherry did another wheel spin as she turned out of the other end of the street.
Well, it's nice that you have such a trusting relationship.
Thanks again, Mum, for all the effort you put in last night. Fantastic steak.
My pleasure.
So what did you think?
Hmm?
Do you like her?
Very much.
She was nervous.
I thought as much. No need to be. Long term, this one, is she?
Hope so, he said, and made to go inside. Do you fancy a coffee?
Love to, but I've already got a date. Bit of shopping, then meeting Isabella for lunch.
Daniel kissed Laura on the cheek. Sounds good. Send her my best.
I will.
She waved to Daniel as he closed the door. Then she set off in the direction of the main junction, where she'd pick up a cab to take her to King's Road.
Love it, said Isabella. It'll do very nicely for an office meeting.
Laura lowered the striped shirt. I'm sorry, darling. It's nice, it truly is, but where's all the fun gone?
Isabella asked.
It is fun.
Isabella pulled a face.
Okay, this is fun, said Laura, plucking at her blue sleeveless dress.
Yes, said Isabella, unconvincingly, looking kittenish in an emerald halter neck that set off her glossy red hair. But what I mean is, when was the last time you bought something for a social occasion?
Laura was silent. They'd come to their favourite restaurant, a small select French place just off the King's Road. They'd been coming for years, and the waiters knew their preferred table, and which special of the day they'd most likely enjoy. Secrets had been exchanged here, promises sworn on, and confessions frequently applauded. They had been friends for 25 years, and told each other everything.
You see,
she said, waggling a finger. Howard and I don't go out any more.
Isabella put her hand on Laura's.
No, well, he is too busy with that trollop. Why do you put up with it?
Laura folded her shirt and put it back in the stiff designer bag, not answering immediately.
Divorce him?
No. Anyway, that's just what he'd want.
Isabella sighed, knowing the conversation had been had many times before.
What else, then?
What do you mean?
Other evening entertainment?
Laura was aware she didn't really have any.
Bridge night?
Doesn't count. By the time I finish work, I'm exhausted. Friday night, I just want to stay in.
Well, there's a reason to give it all up.
Isabella couldn't quite understand why she worked. It wasn't for the money. Laura loved what she did. It gave her a sense of identity and achievement, the fact she was successful in such a competitive, cutthroat industry. And most of all, it was hers. Her company had been a friend to her when Daniel was away studying and Howard was away at golf. She couldn't think of giving it up. She smiled at Isabel.
I wouldn't know what to do with myself. Oh, trust me, darling. You soon would.
She leaned forward mischievously.
Anyway, don't you miss it?
Laura laughed, but Isabella was not to be put off and waited for her answer.
No, I don't know. I suppose so. I know the perfect man. I'll set you up. Nothing too obvious. You can come to dinner, there'll be a group of us, and I'll sit him next to you.
Who is it?
You don't know him. He's a colleague of Richard's.
To Laura, the thought of small talk with a stranger was as enticing as a visit to the dentist.
No, thanks. Anyway, that would just make me as bad as Howard. Oh, come on. No, honestly.
Anyway, she said tantalizingly, it's not me going for romance at the moment.
Isabella leaned in.
Who?
He's completely smitten. This could even be the real thing.
Izzy clapped her hands in delight.
Not Daniel.
Laura nodded.
What? Does this mean our great plans have been thwarted?
Completely blown away.
Their children had played together ever since they were babies, Bridget and Daniel,
had waved rattles at each other as they lay on their blankets, while she and Isabella had attended whatever postnatal class, playgroup, or personal training session they were up to that week. They had always joked their children would marry. "We met her last night," said Laura. "What's her name?" "Cherry." "Is that her real name?" "Less of the sarcasm. She's very nice." "Does she work?" "She's a real estate agent. In training." "Right. We all have to train, Izzy." "Of course." Laura laughed. "You're not really upset that our machinations came to nothing, are you? Bridget will find a very fine man." Isabella sighed and brushed this away. "I know. So, tell me more. Where does Cherry come from?"
"She lives in Tooting."
"Tooting?" Laura heard the lack of enthusiasm in her voice. "Isabella Rudd, you are such a snob. I've heard it's got lots of great Indian restaurants."
"Darling, so is Goa, and I'd rather go there." "So how long have they been dating?"
"A week." Isabella's eyes widened.
"A week? And he's already madly in love with her?"
"Well, he hasn't said so exactly, but they do seem to be spending every spare minute together. This morning, they even did the commute together. Well, until she took off in his car."
Isabella frowned. "Sorry, she's waltzing around town in his Merc."
"Well, to her office. I'm sure she had to park it once she got there." Isabella looked quite worried, and Laura smiled.
"What?"
"Nothing."
"Come on, I can tell you're dying to say..."
Isabella shrugged.
"It's just that, you know, she's from Tooting. He's here in South Ken, different ends of the spectrum, and she does seem to have attached herself to him rather quickly."
Laura's mouth dropped.
"You're not suggesting..."
"No. My goodness, Izzy, that is one heck of an imagination. I could use your help on my television scripts."
Isabella laughed. "Okay, okay, sorry. Just keeping my sadly never-to-be son-in-law's best interests at heart. You know, I was thinking of inviting her to the villa when we all go out next week."
"Saint-Tropez?" said Isabella, taken aback.
"Yes, make her feel like part of the family."
"That's your downtime, the only 2 weeks of the year you actually let yourself relax."
"I know, but she won't be there the whole 2 weeks. I was thinking maybe she could join Daniel and me for a long weekend or something. You and Bridget will be down the road, and it'll be fun."
"Sounds great, darling, and I'll get to meet her."
"Be nice," Laura said sternly.
"Of course," Isabella smiled. "I'm just jealous. I'd already planned the wedding."
10. Monday, June 16.
"Excuse me, Neil. Do you have a minute?"
Cherry had only just arrived at work and had gone directly to her boss's desk. He raised his groomed head, saw her stricken face.
"Sure. Do you want to come to the back?"
Cherry nodded and followed Neil into the back office, a small room they kept tastefully furnished for when the more private clients wished to discuss their property needs. She felt Emily's and Abigail's eyes follow her as she left, burning with curiosity. Let them look. She wouldn't be confiding in them, not since they rebuffed her efforts to make friends when she'd first started the job. They were tight, just the two of them, and didn't let anyone else in, especially not someone they sensed as different.
"Take a seat."
Neil indicated a brown leather armchair. She sat perched on the edge, sensed that her boss was a little anxious about whatever problem she was about to unleash on him. He sat too, on the chair next to hers, and she got a stab of irritation at his shiny shoes, knew he'd paid for them to be buffed as he sat on a raised seat with a cappuccino and the Financial Times, completely oblivious to the man below him.
"Is everything all right?"
She looked up at him, took a breath to hold back the tears before she started to speak.
"It's my grandmother. She's ill. Really ill. I was wondering if I could have some time. A few days to go and see her."
"Of course,"
exclaimed Neil, and she detected a sense of relief this wasn't about women troubles.
"When do you need to go?"
"This Friday."
She saw him hesitate.
"I know Emily and Abigail go on holiday the same day."
She trailed off helplessly. There was a millisecond's pause while he struggled, before reassuring her.
"It's okay. We can get a temp in. How many days do you think?"
"I won't stay long. Just enough to see her. Only, she's abroad, so I might need to factor in the travel."
"Where is she?"
"France. I've already checked the flights, and if I leave Friday, I can be back Tuesday morning."
That's fine. We'll work it out here.
Cherry exhaled with relief. Thank you. I can't tell you what this means to me. We're very close.
Neil nodded sympathetically. I hope she's okay.
Her eyes filled up. Me too. It's cancer. They've just discovered it and are assessing her for chemo.
He looked as if he wished he'd never asked. I'm so sorry.
A tear ran down Cherry's face, and she wiped it away with a brave smile. It just means the world to me to be able to go and see her. And I know she'd want to thank you too.
He brushed her thanks away modestly. Honestly, there's no need.
Il est un merveilleux patron.
Sorry?
He is a wonderful boss.
Cherry blew her nose, smiled.
That's what she would say.
Neil smoothed his tie. Well, if that's what I can do to help, then...
He sucked his teeth, then stood, tilted his head sympathetically.
Do you need a minute?
Cherry nodded gratefully. He put a hand on her shoulder and then turned to leave.
Bon chance, he said, and Cherry nodded again.
She waited until he left the room, and then blew her nose loudly, just in case he was still within hearing distance. Paused, listened. Nothing. She smiled. She was going to France, the south of France. When the invitation had come, she'd been so excited, but knew that the two little cows in the office had already booked time off, and there was no way Neil would let her go away too. It wasn't right. She'd never gotten an opportunity like this before. It wasn't fair that she should have to turn Daniel down just because those two had the money to book a fortnight in Ibiza. She was going to the south of France, where her boyfriend owned his own villa. Well, it was his parents. But that was a small detail. It wouldn't always be. She hadn't even had to pay for the flight. Daniel had insisted, saying it was unfair for her to pay so much as the trip was so last minute. She had picked her man well, and she congratulated herself, hugging the information close for a moment longer, relishing it. Then she stood, smoothed down her skirt, and affected a pose of brave serenity before going back to her desk.
11. Friday, June 20. Laura tweaked the vase of flowers in Daniel's, what would be Cherry and Daniel's, bedroom. Provence was renowned for its early summer blossoms, and the fields of poppies spilled out into the roads. She'd picked great bunches, along with honeysuckle-scented brilliant yellow broom. The bed was made with crisp broderie anglaise sheets, and she looked at the final effect, pleased. There was food in the fridge and a bottle of wine chilling, ready for when they arrived in about, she looked at her watch, 20 minutes or so. She moved around the villa, a typical Provençal-style house, checking that everything was tidy and welcoming. Finally, satisfied, she went out onto the sunny terrace, from which she could see the whole of the Saint-Tropez Peninsula. She gazed out at the gleaming white yachts, tiny dots in the distance, some moored, some gently drifting in the breeze. She felt different when she was here. The house in London was Howard's. This was her escape, and over the years it had been a place of refuge when things had gotten on top of her at home. Since she'd gone back to work, she only got here a few weeks a year. Whenever she did, it was like coming back to an old friend. It was particularly gratifying to be here now, because their neighbours in London had started construction the day she left. They were embarking on their own basement extension, and the excavator was deafening. Vibrations were throbbing right through their house. The builders had already tripped a power cut, and it had been a relief to get on the plane. It seemed the whole of Kensington was digging underground, a labyrinth of tunnels and vast chambers. Laura had visions of whole sections of London collapsing into one great big pit. A brief thought crossed her mind. How would Howard cope with the disruption? He hadn't been able to come to France due to work commitments. The answer came just as quickly. She knew he wouldn't be staying at the house. He'd be at Marion's. She quickly brushed this painful thought away. For 2 weeks at least, she could escape everything, and Daniel, no doubt, was pleased to be coming here as well. She knew he had lots of studying to do, and there wasn't much chance of getting it done with the cacophony next door. Cherry would be with them until Monday night, and Laura had lots of plans for her visit. She really wanted to show her around and get to know her a bit. She was looking forward to making this trip special for her, wanted the villa to be a place she could relax too. Laura had an idea they might bond, become friendly. It would be nice. Hearing a car on the gravel drive, she turned and went back through the house, opening the front door wide. Daniel had parked the rental car and was hauling out the luggage from the trunk.
Laura opened her arms and went to hug Cherry. "Welcome. So glad you could get the time off."
"Me too," said Cherry.
"Come in. Are you tired? Do you need a drink?"
It was early evening and gloriously warm. Cherry looked up at the house. The shutters and windows were open, and gauzy white cotton curtains were caught against window frames. She was already liking what she saw. She let herself be taken inside and fussed over. She took in the large, airy reception rooms with their big, open fireplaces and the French country chic kitchen with gleaming teak worktops. She accepted a glass of chilled Sauvignon.
"How was your flight?" asked Laura.
"Good, thanks."
Cherry's attention was taken by her surroundings, and she didn't really engage with Laura's polite conversation. She continued to gaze around the kitchen and was struck by a painting on the wall above her, a vivid oil colour of russet-roofed buildings around a sandy-coloured square, with yachts on an azure sea in the background.
"What a beautiful painting," she exclaimed.
"Isn't it?" said Laura. "A local artist."
"Is it of Saint-Tropez?"
"Yes, of course there are stacks of painters down in the village, all excellent, but this one, he is one of the best. We've got a few more dotted around the house."
"My absolute favourite is on the landing," said Daniel, coming in behind them and putting his arm around Cherry. "Le Pin."
"The pines. Sounds wonderful."
Daniel looked up at the picture.
"It's fantastic, isn't it? I've always loved this artist." "She's got good taste, eh, Mum? These are worth quite a bit now. He's become pretty famous. I love them. One day I might buy a painting for myself, if there's ever one available. Most of the time they have sold stickers on them."
"Would you like to see outside?" asked Laura.
Cherry followed her hostess through some large glass doors onto the terrace and caught her breath. Beyond the large gleaming pool was the blue of the Mediterranean, a heart-soaring expanse that fused into the hazy sky. Lured by what she could see, Cherry walked toward the garden wall dotted with red geraniums and leaned over to get a better look. Far below her lay the tops of the russet roofs of Saint-Tropez, which she'd just been admiring in the painting. And the yachts, there were so many of them. It was unlike anything she'd ever seen before.
"Bit of a rubbish view, eh?" said Daniel, joining her.
Cherry blinked. Speechless, she burst out laughing.
"We can go and explore later," Laura said enthusiastically. "Show you around. And we've got an invitation from Isabella for dinner."
"Mum's oldest friend," explained Daniel. "Is Bridget here?"
"Yes," said Laura. "Bridget is Isabella's daughter," she added for Cherry.
Cherry smiled politely.
"Hope you've got lots of stamina," said Laura. "I've got loads of ideas for your stay. Thought you might like to go and take a look at some of the vineyards. It's so beautiful up in the hills. And, of course, a little tour of the village here. It's classified as one of France's plus beaux villages. And we can go to the beach, obviously. And I thought maybe you'd like to take a drive up the coast to Cannes. Anyway, there's loads to do. You can just go at your pace."
Cherry smiled along, but she inwardly prayed that she didn't have to share her entire weekend with her boyfriend's mother. The first event was dinner at Isabella's villa down in Saint-Tropez itself. Cherry had just enough time to shower and change, and spent a stressful 10 minutes wondering what she should put on. Did the money dress up, or did they just do expensive casual? Cherry didn't know, and eventually settled on a fairly simple and cheap cotton dress. She couldn't afford much of a vacation wardrobe, and the dress was something she'd bought when she was in Australia. She hoped it didn't look too faded. Cherry noticed Isabella's eyes went to her first as she opened her wooden front door, even though she was busy helloing those she knew.
"Oh, you darling boy," said Isabella, embracing him tightly. "I don't see you for months, and then you spring this..." She turned to Cherry and beamed. "Lovely surprise on me."
She wasn't unfriendly, but her gaze was most definitely one of assessment, of ego-laden curiosity, thought Cherry.
"Bridget's going to be devastated, you know."
Daniel laughed. "I think she's got better taste."
"Nonsense. Still, what's done is done, and what a wonderful couple you make. And I, for one, am delighted to meet you, Cherry."
"Likewise," said Cherry, although she mistrusted the jovial lament. She didn't really want to be meeting a load of strangers that included a girl who, it seemed, might hold a candle for Daniel. She was already feeling tired at having to fake smiles. And who was this girl, anyway? Was she some kind of ex? Cherry felt vulnerable not knowing.
"So shall we come in, Izzy?"
asked Laura, raising a stern eyebrow. Daniel held Cherry's hand as they were led into the garden,
where she was greeted by another breathtaking view. A curved infinity pool hugged the edge of the hillside, beyond which was the sea, its azure blue broken up every now and then with spray from the tufts of gentle waves. Lying by the pool were two svelte, perfectly tanned girls. "Look who's here, Bridget," called Isabella, and the tawny brunette squealed in delight. She jumped up from her sunbed, her small, pert breasts jiggling in their bikini top. As she came over, she threw her arms around Daniel, pressing her breasts against his shirt. Cherry stiffened, taking an instant dislike to her.
"It's so good to see you! We missed you at Courchevel this year. Where were you?"
"Studying," said Daniel briskly, "as I was the year before that and the one before that."
He took Cherry's hand.
"This is Cherry."
Cherry found herself moving in closer to Daniel and clutching his arm.
"Hi," said Bridget, noting her move. "You don't have to worry about me. We're like brother and sister."
Cherry smiled tightly, feeling awkward.
"Hello, Auntie Laura,"
Bridget called and waved.
"This is Nicole,"
she said, gesturing toward the long-limbed girl still on the lounger, who Cherry noticed had been watching the introductions. Nicole slowly got up from the sunbed and made her way over at a speed that meant everyone had to watch and wait for her arrival. She kissed Cherry coolly on the cheek, but her greeting was far more friendly for Daniel.
"It is very nice to meet you," she said with a lingering smile.
Is she flirting? Cherry glanced around to see if anyone else had noticed, but Isabella was talking to a middle-aged Frenchwoman, some sort of cook it seemed, and Laura was carrying a tray of drinks from inside. Bridget had gone back to her sunbed and was artfully arranging her body to catch the falling rays of the evening sun.
"Drink,"
called Laura, and Cherry took a beer from the tray. She followed Daniel to where the empty loungers lay by the pool and sat uneasily, watching Nicole's look of satisfaction as Daniel took the lounger next to her. Laura and Isabella were at a table farther up the garden and were busily engrossed in what looked like gossipy conversation. Cherry looked down at her dress, suddenly seeing a loose thread trailing across her knee. She was too embarrassed to pull it, in case Bridget and Nicole noticed.
"So have you been?" Daniel asked Bridget. "Found a job yet?"
Bridget raised her sunglasses off her eyes and smiled.
"Cheeky!"
Then she immediately slid them back down again and leaned back in the chair, tilting her face to the early evening rays. They lit her skin and tawny hair to a golden colour.
"And you, Daniel?"
Nicole's accent was grating on Cherry's nerves.
"What is it you do?"
"I'm a trainee doctor."
"A doctor?"
She gazed at him admiringly, and Cherry seethed. Did she have to be so blatant? How did she not feel self-conscious in her bikini, meeting a man she'd never seen before? Is that what money did? Give you an air of unbridled confidence? Cherry decided she didn't like either of them, but knew she should pretend she did, at least in front of Isabella and Laura. Daniel was still waiting for an answer from Bridget.
"Well, have you?"
"Just because some of us wanted to travel, expand our minds, and see the world before we got saddled with a grueling schedule."
"You went on ski trips and summer yachts. In fact, are you sure you even left Europe?"
"Malta."
"In Europe."
Cherry wondered if Bridget was joking, but no, she'd lifted her sunglasses and was looking at him in puzzlement.
"Is it? No. Well, geography never was my strong point. Lucky I'm not planning on being a global reporter or anything. I'd get totally lost."
"You just need to know which plane to catch."
She sat up.
"Really?"
"No."
"I know you think I'm useless," she said, smiling as if useless was an admirable trait. "But actually, I am getting a job, one much closer to home."
"You are? Really joining the workforce?"
"I'm waiting for Uncle Vic to find me an opening in publishing. A family friend," she explained to Cherry.
"So nothing concrete yet," said Daniel.
"You're wrong," she said triumphantly. "He's pretty certain there'll be something in September."
"And she'll get it too," thought Cherry darkly. Bridget would be hired without a thought for those who'd worked hard to gain a foothold in the industry, those who were more qualified, more passionate, and who would probably be 10 times better. Those hopefuls would be pushed aside, and it wouldn't even register with her.
"What do you do, Cherry?" asked Bridget.
"I'm a real estate agent."
"Bet you get to see some nice houses."
"I do." Bridget nodded appreciatively, and that seemed to be all that was needed to be said. Cherry noted how she'd naturally assumed or expected the houses to be nice.
Perhaps she didn't know small flats in large ugly blocks existed. Nicole started to apply some suntan cream. She poured a small amount onto her hands, then slowly and sensually rubbed it into her skin, inspecting her arm as she did so, seemingly pleased with it. She sat up and started to rub the tops of her shoulder blades, stretched a little to try and get to the middle of her back. She gave a cursory glance at Bridget, lying down with her eyes closed, and then turned to Daniel.
"Excusez-moi, could you please—"
she said, holding out the suntan lotion. All of Cherry's hackles went up. He looked on, unsure, a little embarrassed, then held up his beer bottle. "My hands are cold. You're better off asking Bridget," he said pleasantly. She didn't, noticed Cherry, the conniving little bitch. Just smiled and lay back on her lounger. The Frenchwoman in the apron came to the doorway, and Isabella looked up.
"Wonderful," she said. "Madame Baudin says dinner is ready. Shall we eat outside?"
Bridget got up and slipped on a flowing caftan. Nicole stood and stretched languorously in her bikini, then went inside to freshen up, Bridget at her heels. "I'm sorry," mouthed Daniel, and Cherry smiled and waved a hand to indicate she wasn't going to be unsettled by a silly French girl. He waited until Nicole and Bridget were out of earshot and then said, "Are you okay?"
"Fine," she said.
Laura came out of the villa with Madame Baudin, laden with plates and glasses, and Daniel jumped up to help. Cherry took a moment to catch her breath. All she wanted to do was go somewhere private with Daniel, a nice restaurant or something, and yet she had to endure a dinner with these people. There were pretty good odds that either Bridget or Nicole would sit next to Daniel at the meal, neither of which she thought she could stand. The breeze lifted her skirt, and she was glad she'd brought a cardigan. As she went to put it on, she saw another piece of fabric flap in the wind. It was something of Nicole's, a dress perhaps, half spilled out of her bag. Cherry looked up. Daniel and Laura were disappearing back into the villa with Madame Baudin to get more plates. There was no sign of the girls. Isabella had her back to her and was carefully arranging glasses on the table. It fell with a light plip, and the pink darkened and spread in the water. The breeze gently moved it farther down the pool, and it took on the shape and stillness of a drowned body. Cherry was already over by the large table. "Can I help?" she said to Isabella. She looked surprised and pleased that this outsider guest was